Hello, everybody, and welcome to the beginning of the Vox Pop. We've got a great show for you today. Have you done your taxes yet? We've just got shy of 2 months to the day before they're due, and also means it's the busy season for the two accountants who have joined us at the studio today. My very good friend Bill Kahn is a certified public accountant and a partner in the Albany office of UHY LLP. He specializes in private and public sector clients in financial and corporate auditing, strategic financing, taxes, and consulting. He's also our tax man. Jim Daniels is also CPA and partner with UHY. as well as a licensed attorney. He manages the tax practice in Albany and has extensive background in corporate, individual, estate, and state and local tax. Do you have any questions for accountants about your taxes or other accounting-related issues? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Jim Daniels, I know your cousin Jack very well.
We're close.
Yeah, you're close. And so my question is this. What is new this year? Is this something that people may not know that they ought to be looking for?
Yeah, Alan, thanks for having us, and good afternoon. I mean, every year there are changes, okay, to the tax law. And it seems like Congress gets its act together usually on the last day of the year and comes down to the wire when things are supposed to expire, and they extended them. And for this year, one of the main things I think that is out there that would be terribly new to people would be under the Affordable Care Act. If people had to buy health insurance out on the marketplace, okay, basically when they went out and bought that insurance a year and a half ago, they used their 2012 income as an indication of what their premiums would be and what credit that the marketplace would give them.
Okay,
now that it's time to true up. In other words, whatever they paid for that insurance is going to be the credit is going to be based on their 2014 income. Okay, so if you bought insurance on the marketplace, health insurance, you're going to receive a form from the government that you have to report. Okay, and indicate. Okay, and it will match up with your income, and you have to fill out a form on the tax return to see whether you've gotten too much of a subsidy. Okay, or too little of a subsidy, in which case you'd get a refund.
So does the government keep tabs on each of us to know if we did that? I didn't. But if you bought that, does the government say, okay, this was your salary last year, and this is what you declared in 2012 when you first bought it. Now you're now making $25,000 more, and we expect you to pay more.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. And this is only the start of the process. In other words, this is the first year where you have to report this on your tax return. Every individual that files a tax return this year has to indicate whether they have health insurance. They have to check a box, okay? It's mandatory that it be checked whether you have it or not. If you don't check the box, then, you know, it's the government's way of monitoring whether you do have health insurance. And then there are additional penalties if you don't have health insurance.
Wow. Well, Bill Kahn, I'm going to ask you a question soon because you're more of the corporate guy, and while Jim does both, he's sort of the guy who's for the man in the barrel, like me, right? And that's sort of what you do.
That's correct, and I'll just stand by. But I will tell you that the real takeaway from what you just talked about is that the government knows everything. The
government knows everything. And I've often wondered, my father played serious poker every Monday night. Let's say he won. Did he have to declare those things?
Oh, yeah. There are rules out there for declaring gambling winnings, okay?
Yeah.
And the question is, and that's true whether you win the lottery, whether you win scratch-off tickets, whether you bet on the horses, okay? The issue becomes is when the government knows that you've won something.
How would they know?
Well, in terms—
How would they know if he beat Uncle Sol?
They would never know if he beat Uncle Sol, and so he would just have to leave it to his best devices that he'd be an honest person.
I remember on Fire Island, my father said in front of my mother that he had won $300, and that was a lot of money in the 1950s, in a poker game, and my mother demanded he go back.
Well, one of the things about gambling winnings is you can deduct gambling losses to the extent you have winnings. So most people, if you took the overall activity for the year, probably end up losing money.
Okay, look, all five phones are ringing. There's actually one free. Let's go to Kate in Albany. Kate, are you there? Can you guys hear? Can you hear?
Yes, I can hear. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. My brother, sister, and I sold my parents' home, a home I grew up in. They lived in for 60 years, and we each inherited about $26,000 last year. My brother has been trying to pull together receipts for repairs, upgrades to the home, and he's come up with very little from my parents' estate. So my question to you is, what can we claim? We know that there was a new roof, a new patio, a swimming pool, things like that. What are we able to claim within reason to when we do our taxes next week?
Sure. I mean, if I could ask you a couple questions, Kate. Generally, when you inherit something, did you own it before your parents died and they were just living in it, or did you inherit it outright?
They signed it over to us about 15, 20 years ago.
Okay, so they gifted it to you about 15, 20 years ago. So basically what you have to do is essentially what you're doing. I mean, when they gifted it to you, you inherited the cost, okay, whatever their cost was, plus the improvements they made. And then you have to keep track, since you guys own the house, how much money you've put into it, okay? And then when you sell the house, you know, basically what you have to pay tax on is the difference between the amount you received and the cost of the house plus the improvements.
Okay.
So each of you owned a third of the house. Your share was $26,000?
Correct.
Okay, and so if the house, when it was gifted to you from your parents, if they paid $20,000 for the house, and maybe they put another, you know, 10 in it, and if you guys put another 10 in it, that would be 40 that was in it all day. Divide that by 3 is like 13, and if you got 26, you'd have to pay tax on, you know, the difference between the 26 and the 13.
Okay, what if we don't have the receipts, but we know the repairs were made?
Generally, if you know, I mean, the repairs were made, if you were ever audited by the IRS, you'd have to have some kind of proof, okay? And whether that includes a schedule, it'd be nice to have the receipts, but if you had canceled checks or just, you know, something that you've known the work was done, I mean, that would be evidence for that cost.
Okay, thank you. Very good. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
A lot, yep.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, and here's one by email. I'm using my father's IRA investment to pay for a private home health care aid for his care. He has advanced Alzheimer's. As I understand, if the aids were provided through an agency, he could avoid the heavy tax hit because the IRA is being used for medical care. But since we're using private care, we cannot use any such benefit. Is this correct? And is there any way to avoid the tax burden? Since his investments are going to his care, there's no way we could afford the agency and find private care significantly more comprehensive. And that's from Daniel.
Well, I think generally, if you're using the money from his IRA, that comes out as a distribution and it's taxable to him. But on the flip side of that, you should be able to get a deduction. If the home health care is absolutely necessary, then that's a medical expense. Okay, so you take the IRA into income and then you claim the medical expense on Schedule A. One of the difficulties is that there are some limitations on claiming the medical expense based on your adjusted gross income. So it wouldn't be 100% wash in terms of, you know, probably offsetting the entire amount of IRA income. But generally, you should get a benefit for the medical expense.
But Jim, shouldn't it also be, and only because I'm a practicing hypochondriac and found this out years ago, isn't it also, as you just said, it depends on how much you're making during
yes.
a year?
In other words, your medical expenses, when you itemize your deductions, you can deduct medical expenses to the extent they exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income. So if you had $100,000 coming out of the IRA, okay, 10% of that is $10,000. So you could deduct the medical expenses that exceeded $10,000. Now, when you're dealing with a home health aid and someone who's there around the clock, it could easily exceed
sure.
that. So,
sure. Okay, great. All right, let's go to Greg in that's right. Okay, let's go. No, I'm so sorry. We'll go to Greg next. Ann in Scotia. Ann, you're on.
I would like to know if Congress extended the provision about charitable, qualified charitable distributions from IRAs for 2014. It was in effect in 2014?
Yeah, that was one of the things that they came in and swooped in at the end of the year, and they extended that through 2014.
Okay, explain it to the rest of us who may not be as conversant as both of you are.
In other words, if you're over age 70 and a half, okay,
right.
And
that's
the age where you're supposed to take money out of your IRAs, required minimum distributions, okay, you have an option to directly transfer that money to a charity, okay, from your IRA up to $100,000. That way it's not reportable. Well, it's reportable on your tax return. It never hits income, okay? And it's not a charitable deduction because it went straight to your charity. So really, I mean, it's not dramatically different from taking it on your tax return and income and making the charitable deduction, other than the fact we talked about income limitations, which may not make it a direct offset. But Congress generally allows, and that would count. The one beauty of it is it accounts for your required minimum distribution. So when you're 70 and a half, and if you weren't working, that's when you have to start taking money out of your IRA. It's mandatory.
Indeed.
Based on your life expectancy. Okay. So if you you have an option, okay, and they extended it through 2014 to send that money directly to a charity.
That's so interesting. I'm glad you asked this, Ann. One question I wanted to ask Jim here. So let's say I'm 73. Got it? Okay. I'm 73, and I want how much do I have to take every year? Now, I'm getting older every year. Therefore, I'm assuming that they want to take more out every year.
Yeah, generally it's based on – it's a formula, and any trustee or broker that has your IRA will calculate it for you. It's based on your life expectancy. So if you were 70 years old, I mean, generally it would come out to – the tables are fairly generous, like 25-year life expectancy, so they might make you take out, you know, 4% a year of the IRA.
Right.
Okay, and so that's when what you have to take into income.
But does it increase every year because I'm getting older?
It could. I mean, it stays fairly static, I think, the way the tables are built into.
Well, it does. But it's interesting that even for those that are 100, you may have a year or two.
Right.
So the longer you live, the lower the number.
What number?
it's a fact that there's a numerator and a denominator because you're dividing the life expectancy.
Right. So if you're 100, you're not really expected to live that much longer, right?
You may have a year and a half life expectancy.
Uh-huh. So, but doesn't the government want to get everything you've got before you go? Isn't that the whole point?
Not really, but...
Well, Bill is saying you could outlive the life expectancy tables and then you're ahead of the game, right?
That's right.
Like, so I don't know how much money you're spending when you're 100, though.
Longer you live, you never get to zero on the tables.
Okay. And...
Yes.
Anything else?
No, that was the only question.
I thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, and now we go to Greg in the Pine Bush. Greg, you're on.
Hey, guys. My question is, my wife and I have been filing jointly for the last few years. She's been carrying around some student loan debt. She just recently consolidated to a government program. At the time she initially signed up, I was between jobs, so she got in at a certain payment with this consolidation, and now that I have an income, if we file jointly, her monthly payment will double to this consolidation, this payment she set up. So we've been advised to file married but separate. That will keep her payments down, but the only drawback to that is that she won't be able to write off her interest on her student loan payments, and she'll end up owing this year if we do it that way. Is there any way around that or any advice on that?
Well, I mean, it's a matter of pushing the pencil. In other words, you're saying you're going to be penalized if you file jointly in terms of paying, you know, more back on the loan versus paying maybe a little extra tax filing separately. So, I mean, there's no magic other than really you have to do the calculation and figure off, you know, where you're better off. I guess I just can't give you any general answer on that.
Is that what your accountant does for you?
Yes. Your accountant should do that and should really, you know, like you said, make a comparison, give you the couple scenarios, and then, you know, you can decide.
Okay. Well, listen, I messed up. We have to take a short break, and we will be right back. Thank you very much.
Support support comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of the Lake George region since 1988, lglc.org. EPIC 18 Vermont Artisans Manchester Center, an artisan-owned and operated cooperative craft gallery honoring handmade traditions and contemporary design. EPOCHVermont.com. And Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. PostandBeam.com.
And we are back. Bill Kahn is a wonderful friend and partner in the Albany office of UHY LLP, and he specializes in private and public sector clients in financial and corporate auditing and strategic financing, taxes, and consulting. He's also our tax man. And Jim Daniels is also a CPA and partner with UHY, as well as a licensed attorney. He manages a tax practice in Albany and has extensive background in corporate, individual, estate, and state and local tax. We have one free phone, 1-800-348-2551. But I want a little marital counseling here. You know, my wife and I, we fight about many things, but one of them is the fact that I want to pay off my mortgage. My accountant and she are absolutely opposed to it because it's the only deduction we have. Who's right? Me, following my mother's advice to owe no one, and or them, who are saying this is a great thing to do?
Well, I mean, I always look at these as economic decisions. In other words, I think you got to take a look at, you know, the interest rate you're paying on your mortgage, okay, and versus what you're earning on that money outside of your mortgage.
If you're the kind of guy who invests.
Yes, if you're the type of person who's got it in a savings account and is earning 0.1%,
yes.
I mean, it's better off to pay off your mortgage. If you might be someone who is a little investment savvy and, you know, wants to endure a little more risk and you're earning more than that interest rate you're paying on your mortgage, then it might be better off not to pay off the mortgage.
And lately, of course, people have been paying low mortgages.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Okay, so in other words, you're on my side.
Yes.
But Alan?
Yes.
I'd add that your mother has good advice. A person of your age should not have mortgage debt.
Is that right?
That's right.
Explain it.
Well, you're 73 years old.
Young.
Yeah. And you don't want debt at 73.
Because?
That should be one of your goals in life. Your financial goals in life should be that you want to rid yourself of debt by a certain age.
Well, but doesn't your income tax go down based on whether or not you can deduct that mortgage, even if you have plenty of money to pay it off, which I do?
It does, but as Jim said, it depends on your investment alternatives, but also there's limitations on the deductibility of interest. And at the end of the day, at 73, you want to prune your debt.
You're saying I'm going to die, aren't you?
Okay.
We'll go to Amy. Okay, Amy, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about charitable contributions when adopting animals from rescue. In the past 2 years, my husband and I have adopted three pets from three different animal rescues, and how much of that, if any, is tax deductible?
Yeah, I really haven't come across that, and my initial thought is that, you know, while it's very commendable that you're doing such things and it's very nice, you know, it shouldn't be a charitable deduction unless you're writing a check to the Humane Society or anyone else that you're actually rescuing the animal from. And it's quite likely that you're not, because you're actually, you know, taking the animal and incurring expenses, that there really isn't a tax deduction.
What if we gave an additional contribution above and beyond the adoption fee?
Well, that's deductible.
Yes, sure. Yes, that would be deductible. Sure.
That would be.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And of course, you're assuming, Jim, aren't you, that the place you're giving the additional money to is a not-for-profit.
Yes. I mean, in order to claim a charitable deduction, the entity has to be a 501c3 organization or a public charity. And, you know, if you have any doubt as to that, there are, you can go to the IRS website and it should be listed there.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Thanks, Amy. Okay. Let's go to Martha in Gansford. Okay, Martha, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm concerned. My son was in a bicycle accident about a year ago. He was hit by a car and suffered a broken collarbone. And his lawyer says that he may get $15,000. And we are both concerned about, you know, he wants to keep hold of it. He doesn't have any savings or anything, and he doesn't have a college degree. And we were wondering, you know, how much would it be taxed, and how could he best, you know, save and protect it?
Well, generally, if you're receiving damages for, you know, in a lawsuit and it's attributable to personal injury, generally it's not taxable. So the $15,000 would not be taxable.
Oh, wonderful. Then he wouldn't have to report it.
No, generally, yeah, he probably wouldn't get a 1099. If he gets a 1099, it might have to be reported and backed out. I would doubt he would get a 1099 for that, okay? Because the attorneys, I would speak with your attorney or whoever is handling it for you. And, you know, it's because it's personal injury, okay? It's a physical injury.
What does the word backed out mean? You said it.
Well, I meant if it... They sent you a 1099 as if it were income,
right.
Okay? You might go to account and say, I don't think this should be income. It's wrong because it's attributable to personal injury. So, you know, when you get a 1099, generally as a rule of thumb, you want to report the income to the
sure.
government, and then you might subtract it out if you have a position.
Gotcha. Okay, Martha, thank you. Let's go to Judy in Woodstock. Judy in Woodstock, you're on.
Hi. I would like to know whether the principal in a tax-deferred annuity is subject to distributions the way an IRA is, like a TIAA-CREF account, for instance.
As terms of minimum distributions or when you have to take
yeah.
that? You know, yeah. I generally don't think there's a similar requirement as to when you have to take it out, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure on that. I mean,
well, I have TIAA-CREF.
Okay.
And I know I have to take that minimum distribution every year.
You do?
Yes.
That's once you turn 70 and a half.
Absolutely.
Because it's part of a retirement account.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, even though it's not an IRA.
Even though it's not an IRA, but it's part of a retirement account in a qualified
yes,
retirement
account. Yes, it is
account.
That.
And
okay?
they came and they sat with me and they said, if you don't take it out, you're gonna be fined.
Oh, I understand that side.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it just occurred to me, you know, 403B or whatever it's called.
Yep,
I don't remember the alphabet.
Yes, I mean, it's a qualified plan and it's part of the same rules.
Right.
I mean, that's important, Alan. You mentioned that, you know, if you reach that age and you have an IRA where, you know, you should get a letter from your trustee that says, okay, if you're hitting 70 and a half, take the money out. If you don't, there are substantial penalties for not doing it, which defeats the whole purpose of putting the money away.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
But not Roth.
No, not Roth.
No, Roth, just for everybody who's listening, is?
A Roth IRA is generally a regular IRA that was converted and you pay tax on, or it's made with after-tax dollars. So there are no general required minimum distribution rules for Roths.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, and we'll go to Buck in Great Barrington. Okay, Buck, you're on.
Hi there.
Hey,
everyone. I have a question. My mother is 83. She hasn't been filing taxes now for a number of years for her CPA. However, approximately 6 months ago, she sold her home in California and is the sole owner and has moved here to Massachusetts. Does she have to report the proceeds of the sale?
So she hasn't been filing a return at all, maybe because... all she had was income from Social Security?
Correct.
Okay. And now she sold her home. But how much was the gain? Your mom is single?
Yes.
Okay.
Widowed.
Yep. if the gain does not exceed $250,000, okay, she shouldn't have to pay tax on that. And okay. I don't believe there's a filing requirement either.
All right.
So, I mean, you tell me. Is it a house she had for a long time and it had a big gain in it?
Yeah, it's a house she's had for, her dad's had for approximately 30 years. And the gain is somewhat substantial.
Okay. I mean, there's two things, and she's moved here. I mean, you'd also have to, if the gain exceeds $250,000, you'd have to file a return, okay, and there might be some tax due. But you got to keep in mind, like with the earlier caller, you have to count the improvements that were put into the house. And then secondly,
right.
even though she's moved here because the house was in California, you'd have to pay California tax on that.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, okay. Buck.
Yeah, have a good day. Bye-bye.
Okay, very quickly, over by the email at voxpop@wamc.org. Tax preparing companies like H&R Block offer assistance and representation if a person gets audited by the IRS. But what about those of us who wish to do our taxes using online services or who wish to do their taxes by themselves? Where can a regular person turn to help if the IRS decides to audit?
Oh, a regular person could turn to us or any other account. In other words, just because they've done their return doesn't mean that they wouldn't need representation before the IRS, and they simply would have to, you know, authorize us, give us a power of attorney, and we could represent them.
Yeah.
Obviously, you'd want to know what was on that tax return and, you know, what they filed, and you'd probably would sit down and discuss things before you went forward in terms of, you know, what the IRS is actually looking at.
I got audited once. And Uncle Gene, my wife's brother, went to the IRS and came back with an extra $500 for us. I always thought that was cool.
You can't beat that.
Only in America.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Nancy in Schenectady. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Three free phones. Go ahead, Nancy in Schenectady. Your turn.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Good.
I've been gifting my niece for several years now, about exactly $500 every month. Is there any way that I can deduct this on my taxes?
No, that's generally considered a gift from you to your niece. And it's not reportable. It's not income to her, and it's not subject to gift tax because you essentially are giving her $6,000 a year, which is under the gift tax exemption.
And what is the gift tax exemption now?
Well, the gift tax exemption is $14,000 a year per donee. Per donee. So it doesn't even have to be reported. If you were going to give, you know, five of your friends $14,000, you'd be all set.
Really?
Yeah.
isn't that interesting? Now, Nancy, one question for me, and they're going to look daggers at me when I ask this, and it's meant more as a joke than anything else. Your niece doesn't happen to run a not-for-profit, does she?
Don't I wish.
Thanks, Nancy. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks.
Bye.
Oh, boy. Let's go to Dan in Delmar. Dan in Delmar, you're on.
Hello?
Hello, hello.
Hi.
I'm Josh Colony. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, what I'm calling about, my mother, who is 95 and just had total hip replacement, has gone into assisted living. And we got set up, you know, sort of prepared for this Medicaid emergency business. And I was told that since I've been taking care of her for years, up until now, that I qualify for caregiver exemption for keeping the house. But then it dawned on me, and that's for 2 years before, but I've been here for many years. But anyway, but instead of going to a nursing home, she's going to assisted living. So she's in assisted living for 2 or 3 years and then goes into a nursing home. How does that affect my caregiver exemption?
I honestly have to admit I have to punt on that. I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Let's forget that. I came in halfway, and I'm just curious, what is this situation where you can only sell the house for what it was paid for originally, plus improvements, instead of being able to sell it for the market value?
No. You always sell your house for the market value. I mean, the question really becomes if you have to pay tax on the house, okay? So in other words, if it's your principal residence, and you're married, you get a $500,000 exemption from gain on the sale of the house. That means that you'd have to sell it for more than $500,000 what you put into it. And if you're single, that's $250,000. You always have the you always want to sell your house at the market value.
That's what I thought. I just thought maybe there was some condition where you weren't allowed to in some Medicaid, you know, what they call a clawback or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, you don't confuse the tax rules with the rules that have to do with, you know, Medicaid and you know, assisted living and funding that. I mean, there are very specific rules where, you know, homes must be transferred, you know, within 5 years before the person, you know, goes in a nursing home. And you know, that's kind of outside the tax realm. And I would probably consult with an attorney on that.
Okay, Dan, thank you very much. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. And Gary and Carol, you stay right there.
Support comes from the Whistling Kettle Tea Shops and Cafes in Ballston Spa in downtown Troy, New York, featuring private room in the Troy Cafe for bridal showers, parties, and special events. TheWhistlingKettle.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or VisionExcelEyeCare.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. And Fleury Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, providing advice and assistance for projects small and large. Items such as Benjamin Moore paints, hardwood flooring, Anderson windows, Trex decking, tools, lumber, hardware. FleuryLumber.com.
And we are back thanks to our wonderful Zachary, who does magic every day. Okay, so let's go to Gary in Schenectady. All right, Gary, you're on.
Hi, guys. Great program as usual. We're back to a house question again, and I really want to refer back to the very, very first question you took on the show from the gal who was selling the house after her parents passed away.
Sure.
That they had been living in, but had gifted to the children years before and everything. Now, isn't it true that if they hadn't gifted to the children but simply left it to them in a trust or in a simple will, that the cost basis would be the cost that they inherited it at, and therefore if they sold it immediately, there wouldn't be any taxes?
Yes, you're absolutely right there.
Isn't that a good reason why it's often a good idea not to gift things to kids ahead of time?
Well, and again, a reason why something might be gifted ahead of time has nothing to do with taxes, but might be with having a parent begin to deplete their assets. So in the case they had to go into a nursing home, they would have less assets and receive more assistance. So it's more of a as an overall strategy, yes. It's great, a tax strategy. You inherit the house. You get a stepped-up basis to the fair value of the house. So when you turn and sell it, there's generally no tax. But there's usually the situation kind of dictates you know, what's going to be done and whether something's gifted, because you might be looking at the long-term care of that parent and what's better financially.
Right, which may or may not happen, so it's kind of a crapshoot in that case.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gary.
Yep, bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Carol in Kingston. Okay, Carol, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan and guests. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a widow, and my only income is Social Security. I have received a 1099 form from them. I have very little interest from my savings, and I'm wondering, do I need to file, and what are the guidelines?
Yeah, I mean, generally, you probably don't need to file. A quick check on that, depending on how much other income you have, and I don't have
any. I don't have any other.
If you go into your – generally, I would say you wouldn't have to file. If you go into the instructions for the Form 1040, you can go to irs.gov and find the instructions. There's a table there which tells you, you know, you fit in your age. It tells what your income is if it's only Social Security. And generally, your other exemptions should overshadow that income, and it's not taxable.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Yep. Thank you very much, Carol.
Bye now.
Yep. Okay, and 1-800-348-2551. Bernice from Woodstock. Bernice.
Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. My husband had to enter a nursing home a year and a half ago. And we are not Medicaid eligible. And I've been a private payer. At this time, I found out about something called a senior refusal. That is an option I might have, because although I have other assets, I have worked for them all my life, and they are for my and my children's. You know, they're for my care and what is left over for my children. What does senior refusal really mean?
I really don't know. Are you talking about, I mean, generally what you're saying is that if you had to go into a home, all your assets would be used for that.
No, totally. And my husband may have to be in this home for many years. He was there because of an unsuccessful brain operation, and he could live for years this way, in this manner, and I would have to give up every dollar I own.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend that in that situation, and it sounds like you might have some substantial assets,
yeah,
is that you speak. It's really not a tax question. It might be a planning question for this, in terms of talking to an attorney.
Well, it's elder law.
An elder law attorney, exactly. Somebody that says, okay, you know, here's how we'll deal with these assets. Maybe it makes sense to gift something now to your kids. You know, the discussion along those lines.
I see. But you're not familiar with the basic senior refusal option.
No, I'm not.
Okay. I thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Alan.
And thank you. Bernice, and let's go to Rich in Whitesboro, 1-800-348-2551. Rich, you're on.
Oh, thank you very much. I had a question about converting to a Roth IRA from regular IRA.
Sure.
And I also have deferred compensation. I was wondering what the limits are for 2015.
As far as what?
Total amounts. Or is it the number of times you can do it?
No. What's changed this year, okay, is your ability to take money out of an IRA, okay, individually and borrow it and put it back in for a 60-day period and not have it be taxable. Okay, you can only do that once a year now. Before, you could do it unlimited times, and I don't think the IRS liked the fact that people were taking money out of their IRAs and just putting it back in after a certain period of time. Converting to a Roth IRA, you know, that always can be done. And basically, when you do that, you're simply paying tax on that, either part of it or all of it. And so I think what you may want to do is looking with your deferred comp, if you have a, you know, deferred comp coming in, is to try to time it so you're in a lower tax bracket if you do decide to convert to a Roth IRA.
I see. Okay, yeah, that's very helpful. Very good.
Yep.
That clears up a lot.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, and 1-800-348-2551. Lots of free phones. Let's go. We just talked to Rich, didn't we?
Yep.
Rich in Whitesboro. Okay, let's go to Christine in Chatham. And that will be on line number two. Christine, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to ask about my 20-year-old daughter.
Right.
Has inherited her grandmother's TIAA retirement fund, and we want to spend it directly into the daughter's college tuition.
Okay. Your daughter inherited it directly from your grandmother? She was the beneficiary of the fund, or did it come through her will?
No, she was directly the beneficiary.
Okay. And so I think there are specific rules. Have you talked to anyone about this?
Not yet.
Yeah, I think there's specific rules over, you know, over a period of time in which she has to take that into income. Okay.
Yes.
And so it may be a 5-year period, if I'm not wrong. But then you're saying you want to turn around and use it for her college. Well, you're not going to get a deduction for college, but what might work is if she's reporting income and then she's able to claim a credit, okay, for those college expenses, that might be the best bet. In other words, on her own tax return, taking it into income and then claiming the college tuition tax credit.
Okay, so there wouldn't help any to take the retirement fund, put it into a 529, and then pay the college.
Well, no, I think because no one's paid tax on that money, that was would have been income to her grandmother. And so, you know, somewhere along the line, someone has to pay tax. And so usually when you put money into a 529 fund, it's with after-tax dollars.
And Christine, I think you also have the option of taking that out over your daughter's lifetime. In other words, you could extend it at age 20. It could be 70 years, 60 years or more. So you can take out a very small amount each year and pay the tax on that.
Well, that would help. I did wonder about, of course, there's a mandatory withdrawal based on it being a retirement fund, but it isn't my daughter's retirement fund, but she still has to take those mandatory.
Yes, there are specific rules, and I think what Bill mentioned is maybe there's an option she can take it out over her life expectancy, which would be, you know, she would be required to take out very little each year. But then you're balancing that with the fact that you want to use the money for college. And so, you know, you kind of have to say, you know, maybe we take out – again, it involves a little bit of, pushing the pencil. In terms of if she took X amount into income, perhaps, and paid directly for college and she claimed a college credit, that it would offset some of those taxes.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Because if we could leave it in the account and, you know, for 70 years, obviously that's an advantage over paying for college some other way.
One of the things that I've found, because I love my TIA Cref guys, is that I can call them and ask them questions. And I don't think you lose anything by calling Tia Kreff and asking for one of the advisors to sort of set you straight on this.
Okay, good idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Donna in New Windsor. Okay, Donna, you're on.
Hi, I have a question. My other half has been living with his parents for the last 20 years, and his mother died 5 years ago, and his father lived to 100 and died last October. And my friend has been taking care of his parents, but the house is not in his name. It's in his sister's name, and the parents had a living trust so they could live there the rest of their life. What kind of tax credit can he get? You know, I mean, is there any deductions that he can get? He can't deduct the real estate taxes because he didn't pay them. You know, someone else did.
Yeah, it sounds like he was a really good guy and didn't get stuck with the house at the end of the day. You know, really, the only thing that thought that comes to my mind is if he was taking care and living with his parents and he provided more than one half of their support, that arguably he could claim them as a dependent on his income tax return. But if they had independent assets that he was just there and he was taking care of them, but using their money, there's probably very little that he could claim for taxes.
No, he wasn't using their money. The father just lived on his Social Security.
Sure.
You know, they dissolved the estate like 25 years before that, you know, and so, you know, he put the heating system in the house,
put the
window in, you know, yada, yada. And, I mean, he can't claim that.
He didn't own the house. So it sounds like that, you know, doesn't sound like he'd be eligible to claim anything.
Donna, thank you very much. Okay. We've got one real fast one here I think you guys should find interesting. I have a few years of taxes to file because I'm a little bit behind. I want to get caught up. Should I begin by filing the first year that I missed, or should I skip up to this year and work my way backwards until I have every year done?
Well, I think you have to look at the big picture, take all the years, kind of see what you owe, okay? Obviously, interest and penalties accrue from the earlier years, and those could be substantial, okay? And on the flip side of that, you know, you want to be current with your current year's taxes to show good faith that, you know, I'm a good taxpayer even though I missed a couple years. the decision I don't think can be made in the vacuum. I think you'd have to sit down, you know, take a look at the number of years you owe, what you owe. Okay, the IRS will assess interest and penalties. So as a general rule of thumb, you always want to start earlier, but don't be late on the current year return.
Yeah, and you should probably get an accountant, right?
Absolutely.
Who can help you out with this. Okay, thank you very much for that. Let's go to Gail in Neversink. Okay, Gail, I know you have an answer for us, and we're really trying to end this thing. Go ahead.
Okay, it's short.
Sure.
Talking about the woman who had only Social Security income, and there is a worksheet in the instructions that basically says you take the total amount of your Social Security income and halve it and add other income, which she states she doesn't have. And if she's married, if she's single, if the amount is under $25,000, then she doesn't need to file. But it's not just the minimum requirement that IRS lists.
Okay.
Okay, so if she had more than the minimum requirement, she still might have to file.
Correct.
If she's, yeah.
Yes, okay. Yes, I
agree. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
Because it's the Social Security benefits worksheet. It's not the minimum to file.
Okay.
Thanks, Gail.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And let's go to Matt in Albany. Very quickly, Matt, what do you got?
Hi. Okay, well, my mother passed away probably 17 years ago, and I ended up inheriting the land. And I had to sell it recently just to because I couldn't afford just keep paying taxes on it. I'm wondering about the taxes that I either would owe or if I do owe taxes and how that would all come about.
Sure. I mean, generally, you're looking for income tax when you sold the land. You have to look at when you inherited it, what the value of that was, okay? And the difference between what you sold it for and what you inherited it for is your gain that you'd have to pay income tax. If generally, if it was just a vacant piece of land, you know, you're looking at a capital gains tax of 20%.
Yeah, it was abandoned agriculture is what it was called. I actually had to subdivide it just to be able to sell it because nobody can afford larger plots of property outside the Albany area.
Subdivision sometimes gets into a little grayer area because the IRS might think that you're a developer, even though probably listening to you, you're not.
No.
So the issue would be, you know, still if you can argue that it's just held for investment that you should get capital gain on it.
Yeah, I still border the property. There were two, just I cut it in half is what I did, and it was sold right away. Also, I mean, the original purchase of this property, it wasn't any more than what I actually sold it for.
Okay, Matt, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, we are out of time, my friends. And I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to one person, Pat from Bennington, Vermont, who we left on the line. I also want to thank our wonderful guests, Jim Daniels and Bill Kahn of UHY LLP. You guys were very popular today, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us some more, okay?
Sounds good.
Yeah, that'll be great. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Maccabee Farm. Oh, so I'm so sorry. It's Maybe Farm, historic site, Rotterdam Junction, New York, presenting Howlin' at the Moon concert series, live Celtic, bluegrass, and folk music, Friday, March 6th at 7 p.m., featuring Shadowland, SchenectadyHistorical.org. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty items, and prepared foods, honestwade.coop. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com, and Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors, empireexhibits.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been the incredible Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered incredibly competently by Dan Goldstein. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. She runs the show. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.